This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
Well, thank you very much, Roger, and good morning to you. I'm working out of our Western studios this morning in Scottsdale, Arizona, and talk about unusual weather because of the weather that we had back in the Midwest with some of the heat that we had when we left. Interestingly enough, on Tuesday, we left Chicago, arrived here in the Phoenix airport. The temperature in the desert at 11:45 on Tuesday of this week was 1 degree cooler than it was in Chicago when we left. Talk about unusual weather. We have it. But we're looking at 110 degrees in the desert before the weekend is over. And they haven't had rain in the desert now, I think, for about 48 days. It's very dry. A lot of concern about wildfires and forest fires. And yet those fires that start, nearly 90%, are started by carelessness or deliberate activity on the part of human beings. But anyway, greetings from the desert, where right now, let me see, we're looking at a temperature of, very nice, 77 degrees here in the desert this morning. We're going to be checking in with Jim Fizell, and then, of course, Max Armstrong will join us. We're into June Dairy Month, and you know my slogan for June Dairy Month, take a cow to lunch and say thank you for all of the good protein that comes from that milk from the dairy cow that turns into butter and cheese and ice cream and yogurt and all of the other good things. And again, the June Dairy Month breakfast season is underway. Wisconsin, far and away, the leader of inviting people out to a dairy farm for a farm breakfast and the opportunity to see how milk is actually produced in today's modern environment. I counted up the number of June Dairy Month breakfasts in Wisconsin, and I think about 75 June Dairy Month breakfasts are on the schedule for America's Dairyland. So enjoy June Dairy Month, and we'll be talking about that quite a bit, not only from the standpoint of what's provided by the dairy cow, but the challenge now facing farmers who milk the cows financially, because people have cut back on their consumption of whole milk and fluid milk. They're turning toward, well, I can't call them milk because I've never milked an almond plant. I've never milked a soybean plant. I've never milked an almond tree. But they are calling them milk, which in my mind is totally wrong. They are a beverage. They're certainly not meat, milk, if they didn't come from a female bovine or a goat or even sheep. There's a farm out here, Paul Roby, who has been very active in the dairy industry for years. As a matter of fact, grandfathered into the city limits of Glendale and has a dairy farm there with about 1,800 Jersey dairy cows. But he is beginning to milk sheep and making it into sheep cheese. And as he says, not cheap cheese, but sheep cheese. So a lot to talk about agriculturally, no matter where you live. And getting back to the question that Steve Dale raised with me on a different diet for pets and a different diet ultimately for humans. Yeah, it's probably going to change. And now we have what's called fake meat. And the legislature in Missouri passed a law to make it very clear that fake meat, which does not come from a hog or a steer, is identified as such so that consumers know what they're getting. Lots to talk about, as always, in what I call the most basic industry in the world, the industry that provides food and feed for all of us. We're glad to have you with us here on the Saturday morning show. And I don't know if you practice container gardening in the city, on your balcony, on the apartment buildings, but Jim is going to talk about container gardening when we come back here on the Saturday morning show. Jim Fizell, our specialist in ornamental horticulture, joins us again this week. And as I look at my calendar, we're about 21 days away from summer, but you're saying it's here already.
Oh, it's here already. Actually, meteorological summer started yesterday on the 1st of June. But after what we've had this past week, who can deny that summer's either here or on the way? Of course, today and this weekend, it's going to be cool again, which is par for the course here in Chicagoland. It gets hot and then it gets cool. In fact, it'll do that all summer and in some summers. But anyway, we had a bit of rain this weekend in some areas, 6 inches in Barrington, from what I understand. We got 3/4 of an inch here. I just want to remind folks, after we've had the kind of rains that we had in May and what these folks in Barrington have had, after the rain stops, soils dry out very quickly. So you need, if your plants are wilting, they may be dry, even though it's only been a few days since we had rain, but you need to check. If your soils are saturated, plants will wilt, and if they're too dry, plants will wilt. It doesn't matter to the plant whether it's too wet or too dry. So check before you water, but be aware that even after we had as much rain as we had this spring, water still may be necessary pretty quickly.
So talk anyway to me this week about container gardening. What's that all about?
Well, I'll tell you. We have so many folks don't want to spend as much time as they used to do out in the garden. Maybe it's they want to go on vacation in the summertime, and we have a lot of shelf dwellers parked on the sides of the high rises down in the city of Chicago, condo dwellers with minimum space and so forth. And a lot of us just like to have plants around our patios. So I wanted to talk a little bit about container gardening, some of the peculiarities about it and some of the benefits of it. And actually, you can produce either flowers or produce right at your fingertips out in containers in your yard. They fit almost any situation. They do fit all right on the high rises. They fit on rooftops, and we do have people that are gardening on rooftops down in the city. They fit around the patio in the backyard, and they can fill accents in the border garden. Even if you have a garden out there, you may have spots where you need an accent of some kind, and a container will do very well. The location is important. If you're going to grow vegetables in particular, you need sun for about 8 hours of a day. Flowers will tolerate a little less than that. Some kinds of flowers will tolerate practically no direct sunlight at all. Vegetables, the less sun you have, the less product you have. In the full sun, there just is not really a limit to the things you can grow. But the other thing you need to remember is if you have containers, they're portable. You can move them around to chase the sun. And even though you have decorations in the garden for when you have company over, that doesn't mean you have to leave them in those positions and those locations during the week. You can put them back into the growing locations where they'll do better, then move them to where you want them as decorations when you're going to have company over. They're portable. You can move them wherever you want them. Containers, there's a big selection of them at garden stores. You can get almost any kind of container at the garden stores, but I like to check around with garage sales, too, for bargains. A lot of times folks have big containers that they don't want to hustle around anymore, so they're for sale. You can pick those up. A lot of interesting things in garage sales. For a tomato plant, you're going to need a container that's about a 16-inch diameter pot. That's a pretty good-sized pot, or a basket. Or if you're not concerned about what it looks like, you can use these 5-gallon egg cans that you can get practically free at a lot of places. Planting bags have become popular. These are plastic bags full of a planting mix. You buy the bag with the mix already in it, punch a hole in the top, put the plant in it. And of course, we have planter boxes around our patios and porches and window boxes and so forth. These are all containers. they all have one thing in common, and that is they need drainage. That's important. If you're going to grow in containers without drainage, you're going to drown your plants. They become quite a problem. You really have to have built-in drainage if you can. Punch holes in the bottom of whatever container you have. If you have a ceramic pot, a big one that you don't want to punch a hole in, use a liner. It could be another pot that fits inside of it, or you can figure out some way to put a liner in that pot so that the water drains out the bottom. This means you put some gravel in the bottom of it, you put the container in, and your plant actually grows in the container. Now, if you do that, eventually that gravel or whatever space you have underneath is going to fill up with water, so you need to have some kind of a drainage system, a pump system, to get that water out of there. If it's a small container, you can just pour it out. Large containers, you need to develop some kind of a system where you can even pump the water out. Sometimes a good old sump pump, if you had a boat at one time and saved the sump pump, those work very nicely. Turkey basters in pots that are not so big. Or you can set up siphon systems where you can siphon the water out when it needs to be. But you do need to check and make sure that the pot is not saturated, that the pot isn't full of water, so that the soil is saturated from the bottom. Now, the planting mix that you use is important as well. Garden soil will not work. It doesn't drain, it becomes compacted, and it eventually stops working and your plants will die. You need to buy a potting mix, a brown colored one, not the black one, or you can make your own. A third garden soil, a third number two torpedo sand, and a third brown peat moss works very nicely. I like to use the potting mixes that you can buy at any garden center. They work as well as anything. If you're going to use a potting mix like that, keep in mind that these are very light. If you have a windy location, you may need to prop the plants up both in the container and in the location, because sometimes if the pot is not heavy enough, especially if it dries out a little bit, it's going to blow over in windy conditions. Kinds of plants? About any kind of annual will grow out there. I caution people about perennials. The perennials will grow in these very nicely, but they're not going to last over winter a lot of times, because the plant or the pot with the soil in it will freeze in from the side and the top and kill these plants that are exposed. So perennials don't work as well as we'd like to see them. Mix tall and low-growing plants, annuals. Refurbish them during the season if they get out of sorts. Another thing that I like to do is to grow some of my vegetables close to, especially things like herbs, close to the kitchen where you can run right out and grab them. But you can grow tomatoes, the dwarf kinds. A dwarf bush squash work very nicely. We have a friend that likes to grow carrots, believe it or not, in a container. This means that you have to have a container that's maybe 12 inches deep with a light soil. Actually, she grows in a sandy soil, which works very well. But in these boxes, you can grow peppers and greens. You can even grow beets and carrots and, of course, herbs. One thing you don't need to do is be locked into whether you're going to do vegetables or flowers, because you can mix them. They both work just as well. As far as the care is concerned, you don't have to water, but water can be quite a challenge. Something that you need to remember, too, is that water may run through that pot if the soil is allowed to dry out. So you need to be sure that you're actually watering the soil, and you do this by stage watering. That means you put a little bit of water on the top of the surface of the soil, and you let it sit for maybe 30 minutes, then water through. That allows the soil to swell up so the water doesn't run through the cracks and not wet the rest of the soil. If you have a south-facing balcony or your plants are out in the full sun, you need to check twice a day to make sure that your plants aren't drying out too quickly. A lot of us consider automatic watering systems like drip watering. And one thing that I want to caution, if you're on a balcony, be considerate of the neighbors below you, because they're not going to appreciate that drainage water running down when you're watering your plant. You need to arrange some way to collect that so it doesn't do that. Fertilizer is necessary, because everything in that pot is what you're going to provide it. The soluble fertilizers in the watering work very well. Follow the directions on the label. Bugs are usually not a problem. Wind can be a problem out there on those decks. So you need some kind of screening and support that I mentioned below. And sometimes it's just too sunny and too hot, which means that sometimes you're going to have to provide shade, particularly if you can't move the plants on your balcony, move them out of the way, something like that. But you need to protect those plants from the terrific heat of the day if they are not where they can help themselves, and especially if they dry out too much. You need to be able to protect them. The experience is great. Enjoy it. Enjoy the colors, and especially enjoy the harvest. Containers will do a lot of things for you, and the harvest is the answer to the thing.
And Jim, we always appreciate your instructions and your knowledge and all of that that we've had the pleasure of working with for four decades. Our visit with Jim Fazell, he is our specialist in ornamental horticulture here on the Saturday Morning Show. 26 minutes after 5 o'clock here on this Saturday morning, and one of the events that I'm missing back in the Midwest, since I'm spending a couple of weeks in Scottsdale, Arizona, but one of the events that I've participated in for decades and will not be there this year is taking place this weekend. The longest running festival in the state of Illinois, Harvard Milk Days in Harvard, about 65 miles northwest of Chicago. It's a 3-day event, started yesterday. It'll go through tomorrow with a huge parade. They paint the street white, call it the Milky Way, and they now have permanent grounds for the carnival and the dairy show and a lot of other activity that is part of the Salute to the Dairy Industry to start June Dairy Month. This event, I think, started back in 1942 and has had some famous visitors. President Lyndon Johnson's daughter was the guest of honor at one of the parades, and senators and governors have all been participants to salute the dairy cow, because at one time there were just dairy farms in McHenry County. That has changed a good deal, but Harvard billed itself as the milk capital of the world. They'll have dairy shows, they'll have carnival, they'll have a parade, they'll have good food as always. So if you're looking for something to do today or tomorrow, get to Harvard, Illinois for Harvard Milk Day. One other thing I wanted to mention too with Jim Fazell's visit, we are now into farmers market season, but in some communities like Huntley, where I call home, the farmers market season never ended. They now have a farmers market in the wintertime, inside, of course. But the Huntley Farmers Market today from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m., and they're going to have a craft fair, a Legion breakfast buffet, and entertainment in the square at Huntley, Illinois. And you'll find farmers markets all over the Midwest, because the popularity of the farmers market has grown substantially over the years. So get out, get fresh food, fresh produce, because farmers will harvest the crop early in the morning. They've been up probably since 3 or 4 this morning harvesting some of the crops that are ready now to come into Huntley and other farmers markets around the country. So enjoy the countryside and enjoy all of the activity that goes along with it. And special greetings to all of my friends at Harvard, Illinois for putting together the longest running festival in the state of Illinois. Thank you very much, Roger, and listening to that forecast and comparing it with what's going to happen here in Scottsdale, Arizona this weekend. Enjoy the air conditioning back in the Midwest, because here in the desert, it's going to hit 110 degrees over the weekend. And of course, humidity at about 5%, so you really hardly break a sweat, even at 110 degrees if you're out in the yard. But good to have you with us as we work from our Western studios here on WGN Radio Chicago. And Max Armstrong will be checking in to talk dairy markets on this first weekend of June Dairy Month. And he'll also be checking in with a representative from BASF to get a look at crop conditions at this early stage here in the Midwest area. So stay with us for that. Right now, as we say, welcome to Samuelson Says, brought to you by Wink Products Company, makers of quality specialty cleaning products since way back in 1947. And today we're going to share with you on Samuelson Says some little known facts about June Dairy Month.
If you're frustrated by slow drains, or if you find yourself standing in water when you take a shower, the cause could be hair and soap scum buildup. Well, speed up your drains and solve your problem with Wink Hair Clog Blaster. Don't call the plumber. Pick up Wink Hair Clog Blaster instead. Wink Hair Clog Blaster, it does the job for you. Be sure to check out all the products offered by visiting their website at Wink. W-H-I-N-K, wink.com.
It's June Dairy Month, time to celebrate, and I like the opening slogan, eat, drink, and be dairy, but I have my own slogan, June Dairy Month, take a cow to lunch and say thank you. The holiday and the month goes back to 1937, when a group of chain stores promoted drinking milk to increase demand at a time when cows were turned out to pasture and milk production was at a peak. And that year it ran from June 10th to July 10th. Then the National Dairy Council stepped in to promote the cause in 1939. And it was proclaimed as June Dairy Month. And in 1955, the American Dairy Association took over the promotion of June Dairy Month. So here are some dinnertime conversation facts about June Dairy Month that you can share with your family at dinner. For example, the average dairy cow weighs about 1,400 pounds. Cows have 32 teeth, all of them on the bottom, with a dental pad on top. A cow eats 90 to 100 pounds of food and drinks about 35 gallons of water. That's the equivalent of a bathtub full every day. And a cow spends about 6 hours eating and 8 hours chewing its cud. A cow does not actually have four stomachs, but a single stomach with four compartments. And a cow produces an average of 6 1/3 gallons of milk daily. That's more than 2,300 gallons each year and 350,000 glasses of milk in a lifetime. U.S. dairy farms produce roughly 21 billion gallons of milk annually, and 99% of all U.S. households purchase milk. And, of course, there's so many other products that come from that milk cow. It takes about 14 pounds of whole milk to make 1 gallon of ice cream, 21.8 pounds of milk to make 1 pound of butter. And now you're about fully educated on the importance of June Dairy Month and the dairy cow. My thoughts on Samuelson Says. A presentation of Tribune Radio Networks here on WGN Chicago. We're at 20 minutes before 6 o'clock on this Saturday morning, Harvard Milk Day weekend in Harvard, Illinois, and a lot of farmers markets in towns across the country and, of course, in the Midwest. We are going to talk a little bit more about the economics facing dairy farmers as we kick off June Dairy Month. Max Armstrong will be joining us right after this.
From Rice Dairy, the firm in Chicago, Brian Rice, welcome. Good to have you at the microphone.
Great to be here, Max.
Welcome to June Dairy Month. Have we ever seen this kind of turmoil in the dairy industry as we've gone into June Dairy Month with disruption of the marketplace, challenges economically for the producers? Across the landscape, it's pretty tough right now, isn't it?
It is. I don't think we've ever seen this mix of challenges. Fortunately, the price situation is not as bad as 2009, although it's not pretty for farmers. It's not horrendous to that degree, so that's not as bad. But you're getting challenges from plant-based drinks. You're getting challenges from the entire way the food chain is working. So it's a really unusual and a mix of challenges like I've never seen before. Fortunately for the producers, we've seen some recovery in price since the beginning of the year. First quarter of this year was pretty dismal. It was below break-evens for most dairy farmers. And forget about the all-milk price. Just looking at a Class 3 price, you know, rule of thumb, we'll say $15 is a break-even price for Class 3. We spent a couple months below there, and I can tell you, you know, working with dairy farmers big and small across coast to coast, that was a losing price for everybody. We've popped above there. The forward curve for July to East is above that at this point. And we've got an uptrend going across the whole dairy commodity complex, whether it's cheese, butter, whey, non-fat dry milk has really been the laggard. Why are we doing that? You know, we could point to a lot of things. There's been a slight drop in production globally. There's a lot of talk about, in New Zealand, there's a lot of talk about peak milk, meaning the growth is done. We've got a new government in place, and that's really environmentally conscious and says everybody basically agrees at the moment, growth is done in New Zealand. So take that growth off the plate. Now it's down to Europe and U.S. Europe and U.S. both had a delayed spring flush. We had a really long winter, a late spring, and kind of knocked the top off a spring flush. And I think people are still trying to answer the question, will we get the full flush recovery later? It doesn't feel like we will. So production curtailed a little bit, helped firm us up. Oil price, you know, kind of just given some boost to commodities in general and telling us there's some commodity strength. And, you know, one of the other very dairy-specific factors, in Europe, there's been 300,000 metric tons or 350,000 metric tons of skim milk powder in government warehouses there for 3 years now. In the last two auctions that happened, we actually started moving product. We moved 40,000 tons one time and 25,000 tons the other time, and the market's starting to take notice. If all of a sudden that mountain starts to go away, that mountain has acted as a price governor. It was meant to be a farmer support program, right, but it's actually been an end user support program by keeping the price down.
I'm laughing because I distinctly recall in the spring of, I think it was 1980 or 81, we went to Europe with then Secretary of Agriculture John Block, and we were talking about the mountains of dairy products in the European Union.
Yeah.
the story is the same 40 years later. It's amazing.
It plays itself out again. Yeah.
But later on this year, how do the prices look? Do you think it's sustainable? That's the big question, Brian. I mean, the dairy industry struggles with being sustainable in its price improvement. It just doesn't last very long, it seems.
It's too early to tell. It really is. I wouldn't want to be short the market. I don't have a position myself, but I wouldn't want to be short the market right now. But I think it's a little premature to say everybody should be all bowled up just yet.
There are some possible positive signs. Some positive signs that could be sustained. They might continue as the year goes on, but just don't know for sure yet.
Yeah, if I was a dairy, I'll just say this: if I was a dairy farmer, I think the second half of 2018, the futures curve offers some profitability. I'd be maybe using puts. I'd be using something to take some risk off the table.
And we didn't even talk about the farm bill. Is there anything in there that is going to be meaningful and helpful to the dairy producers? We've struggled with that in the past to have a successful program that will manage the risk.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of interesting stuff going on the insurance side. In the farm bill, there's proposed changes to the MPP program,
right?
Which would be an improvement. It would more money in there, basically higher payouts. That is dependent upon the farm bill passing. But it seems like that's firmly in there. It seems like the full industry is behind that.
The enrollment last time around was dismal. It was pretty insignificant, the number of producers who participated.
It was.
But this one has more incentive, you're saying.
This one has more incentive. There's belief that there could be more uptake on it. There's also more crop insurance type products that are coming out. And as I understand it, these are going to be unrelated to the farm bill. These are kind of already in the works coming through RMA at USDA. Alongside other, you know, classic crop insurance products that are out there. So dairy RP is something people are seeing in the news these days that represents, it's less complicated than MPP. It's really just a revenue product. I think that's really interesting to keep an eye out for as an additional tool for dairy farmers.
Brian Rice, Rice Dairy in Chicago.
And thanks to Max and thanks to Brian for taking not the brightest look at the dairy industry as far as the dairy farmers are concerned, facing some financial challenges right now as we get underway with June Dairy Month. Well, we're not going to let Max get too far away from the microphone because we want him to come back and give us our weekly look at crop conditions around the Midwest particularly. So stay with us for that and more here on the Saturday Morning Show.
To check up on crops this weekend, we visit with another BASF Technical Service representative. Vince Davis is out there in the field. Where in the world have you been in the past few days, sir? What have you seen?
Well, Max, I've driven all over the place. I've been from the far south reaches of my district in central Illinois all the way up to northern Wisconsin. And the thing I want to say is I just can't believe how good these crops are off to a start.
Well, that was my observation, too. But windshield inspections, I learned long ago, can be dangerous. But I was in the area, traveled Interstate 55, of course, which took me past Pontiac and Bloomington Normal and down into the Logan County area. And the stands are just so even with so few flooded out spots, which was nice for a change.
Certainly there have been a few emergence challenges here and there. I've been in a lot of fields, but for the most part, just beautiful stands, beautiful stand emergence numbers, both corn and soybean, very uniform fields, good green color in the things that was planted early. And we're off to a really good start, and I hope that doesn't change for growers.
I was with an aerial applicator the other day. We were talking about the business, and he uses a helicopter. Chad Agan, who is down at Flora, Illinois, but he applies through much of central, south central Illinois, and he's getting ready, of course, for the fungicide season. It'll be coming before not very long, right?
Absolutely. I tell you, a good racing analogy is once you get out front, don't look back, and I think this is going to be the year for a lot of growers to take the good crop we have and maximize it all the way the best they can. And certainly aerial applications, especially headline amp later in the season on corn, is the standard to get done. This year, though, I think the crop looks so good early season, we need to have a lot more focus on actually getting fungicides mixed in with some herbicides at that pre-tassel timing. Over the years, we've seen excellent benefit from that. A 6-bushel average increase in corn for pre-tassel, pre-axor applications mixed in with herbicide anywhere from the V5 to V10 stage. And I think this is going to be the year to put the hammer down and really go for the yield.
So now you're talking about an earlier application, significantly earlier, right?
Significantly earlier. That's not always, we don't always promote it that timing, but when we have a good crop, and a crop that's really getting adequate moisture, those early applications are good for protecting root growth, encouraging additional root growth, and just keeping that plant off to a fast-growing start. And I think this is going to be the year that we continue to put the hammer down in this corn crop and look for a big yield.
One thing that I talked with this aerial applicator about, now, as I said, he uses a chopper. He said he can get into some places where the fixed-wing aircraft cannot. But I would imagine there are places where you just, isn't it a challenge to get in with any kind of an aircraft in some fields?
Absolutely. We struggle with that in areas, especially in several areas of Wisconsin where the fields are small, and tree lines and other obstacles, it's difficult to get aerial application in there. Helicopters can sometimes get in places the fixed-wing aircraft can't, but regardless, there are still areas where we can't get aerial applications in there. And in those fields, we always recommend pre-tassel application timings of fungicide to get it on with a ground rig while you can still drive over the corn. We especially recommend that in silage corn, and I think a lot of our silage growers have seen the benefit that provides and never questions it. But even in our grain corn areas, I think this year is the year to be looking at those applications to really maximize the return on investment that a grower can make in the crop.
Anything else we ought to be watching, Vince, over the next few days here? I guess you would say, as most of your colleagues would as well, scout your fields, growers, huh?
That's right. Keep scouting out there. Insects have been low, but weeds, water hemp is emerging really everywhere, and the time to get on top of the water hemp and get residuals down ahead of water hemp, especially in those soybean fields, is now. Let's get on top of the weeds, get ahead of the weeds.
Vince, we appreciate the guidance. Always good to talk to you. Thanks for taking the time with us.
I appreciate it, Max. Thank you.
Vince Davis with BASF here joining us on the Saturday Morning Show on WGN Radio.
Over the past 3 years, new vehicle leasing has exploded in popularity in the Chicago market, and that's good news for Chicago consumers. Thousands of low-mileage cars and trucks are coming off lease in great condition, and now they're available for purchase at your Chicagoland new car dealers. These vehicles are safety inspected and certified to be sold with manufacturer warranty at the most competitive prices. Click over to drivechicago.com for a comprehensive listing of the best used vehicles in the Chicago market today. That's drivechicago.com.
You've got a lot riding on the dependability of your car or truck. Why waste a sick day because your car won't start? Choose wisely where you get your car serviced. Your Chicagoland new car dealer has factory-trained technicians with specialized tools and top-quality replacement parts to fix your car right the first time. With a listing of 400 franchise dealers, find a service location today at drivechicago.com. Log on to drivechicago.com for all of your service needs.
We are 5 minutes away from news time here on WGN Radio Chicago. A final note on June Dairy Month. The figures for milk production in the United States for the month of April now out. And my good friend, John Onken, publisher of the Agridairy Business Letter in Madison, Wisconsin, shared them with me. Total milk production in the United States during April totaled 18.4 billion pounds. That's up 0.6% from April a year ago. Average milk production per cow, 1,961 pounds. The number of milk cows on farms in the United States, 9,400,000 head, and that's 8,000 more dairy cows than April a year ago. And taking a look specifically at America's Dairyland, Wisconsin, April milk output totaled 2,520,000,000 pounds, actually down from a year ago, down 0.6%. So again, June Dairy Month, and here's a website for the June Dairy Month breakfasts on the farm in Wisconsin. Go to HooraySwisconsinDairy.com. That's HOORAY, HooraySwisconsinDairy.com, for a list of breakfasts on the farm during June Dairy Month. And let's take a quick look at where markets ended yesterday at the Chicago Board of Trade. We ended the week with July wheat down 3.25 cents at 5.23 1/4 a bushel. July corn down 3.25 cents at 3.91 1/2 a bushel. Soybeans managed to close higher, up 5.75 cents, $10.21 1/4 a bushel. And in the livestock futures trade at the Mercantile Exchange yesterday, the July lean hog contract up 70 cents a hundredweight on the close, ending the week at $78.80 a hundredweight, but cattle ended the week lower. June live cattle at $104.90 a hundredweight, down 35 cents, and the August feeder cattle contract down $1.40 a hundredweight, ending at $146 in yesterday's trade at the Mercantile Exchange. Well, again, let me remind you, farmers' markets are open in communities all over the Midwest. And in Harvard, Illinois, they're celebrating the longest-running festival for June, the dairy industry in the state of Illinois. It's Harvard Milk Days. And that goes through tomorrow in Harvard, Illinois. I'll miss being there, but I know you're going to have a great time if indeed you can make it there. Just a couple of other quick notes on what happened this week. First of all, the Bayer company did win U.S. approval for its planned takeover of Monsanto. Now, that came after the company agreed to sell about $9 billion in assets. And Macon Delrahim, who heads the U.S. Justice Department's Antitrust Division, said that the asset sales agreed to by Bayer were the largest ever divestiture ever required by the United States. So always something to keep an eye on in the world of agriculture, and we thank you for joining us here every week for our get-together on Saturday morning. My thanks to Bob Ferguson, who engineers the whole event back at our Chicago studios, that also on the move because the studios will be moving out of Tribune Tower. And that's coming up a little bit later this month. But thank you for joining us. Thanks to Bob. And it's 6 o'clock, time for news. The news is sponsored by Espoma Organic Liquid Fertilizers, ESPOMA, Espoma Organic Liquid Fertilizers.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on The Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.